the Sharp 600 brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me to get you ready for betting the U.S. Open is Ryan Noonan, director of betting at 4for4Football. You can follow him on Twitter at Noonan. Ryan, great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Rob. Nice to connect. Looking forward to unpacking basically the best tournament in golf. It's going to be a good one.
Well, I love the U.S. Open, but do you believe the U.S. Open is better than the Masters? And if so, why?
You know, I love the pomp and circumstance of the Masters. I think it's indisputable. Having the event being held at the same place every year lends itself to, I think, a different level of, we just, as fans, kind of fall in love with it. We remember previous iterations where X golfer had to hit this shot and you have aim and corner, you have all the aesthetics, but the U.S. Open is, I think, the truest sense and test of golf. And you can't hide at the U.S. Open. You very much have a subset of players that win and have success at Augusta. They aren't always the best. You look at some of the wins there historically, but you can't fake a U.S. Open win. Now, that doesn't mean you're necessarily one of the best in the world, but you have to have 4 days up and down the bag of winning to be able to come home with that trophy. So in that sense, I think it's the best test of golf.
I do like your argument. I will accept it. So there's so much that I'm excited about here, starting with Torrey Pines. Last time the U.S. Open was there, 2008. And that was an extremely memorable event because it was Tiger versus Rocco. And why is that of note for me? Because Rocco Mediate is from just outside of Pittsburgh. So me being a Yinzer from Pittsburgh, all the Pittsburgh media, Rocco Mediate. And it was just a very entertaining match where it went into sudden death. Tiger, best player in the world, versus who in the world is this Rocco guy? But Rocco was so lovable, and it's what goes to why you love the U.S. Open, because Rocco Mediate went toe-to-toe with Tiger Woods.
Yeah, we don't get that shot that we'll get that year where it ended up being a playoff, and the rules of the time where you forced an 18-hole playoff the following day. Now they've truncated those rules. It's basically an aggregate 2-hole playoff, and then they continue if they roll over. So that added an extra layer of drama. We're forcing this guy who just had this heroic performance all week with a torn ACL. We're forcing him to play a fifth round against a absolute lovable underdog. There's really going to be nothing like that ever again. And it's a great way for the Torrey Pines people to be able to kick off their first ever host. And I'm glad that they're back in the mix here.
So we're going to talk about a bevy of things, of how to bet the U.S. Open, golfers we like, matchups, and everything in between. But we can't talk about another major without first talking about Phil Mickelson and what he did at the PGA. And as I started thinking about this show, there is a new type of bet that I at least want to throw out into the table. And let's call that a history bet. So a history bet is something that, as we saw with Phil, gigantic long shot. The odds of it happening, not very good. But if you have an opportunity to bet on history, and maybe it's not always just a long shot, maybe you just want to see a team like Alabama win two in a row, or you want to see Mike Trout hit 500 home runs, whatever. It's part of the fun of betting is the entertainment side of things. So with Phil Mickelson right now, plus 6,600 to win, plus 400 for a top 10. But if you really wanted a piece of history, you would run it back with Phil. But no, Phil can't do that again. Really? Do we think that Phil can't do that again?
Yeah, Phil can't do that again. This venue, even though he's familiar, right, we'll get those narratives. And there's a lot of guys that find their home native to Southern California in the San Diego area. And we know that that's Phil. He's one of them. And it would be a great story for another reason, right? This is not only would be back-to-back majors for this 51-year-old stud. This would be the career grand slam for Phil, right? Like, you're talking about history. You're talking about narratives. Like, we would be out of our mind if Phil is in contention on Sunday. this place sets up even more poorly than Kiawah Island did for him. Like the way that he won and how he won at a place that doesn't fit the profile of Phil, Torrey Pines, and the way that they're going to set it up this week just does not fit Phil in his game at this point in his career. So yeah, I mean, it should be even higher. You know, obviously we're getting a little bit of baked in number from the win at Kiawah, but like, you know, there's an 80 at points bet, I think is the best that I can find if you wanted to sprinkle on some history. And to your point, Rob, I think that's a great point. Like, especially in golf betting, we are dealing with such large numbers in comparison to like, if you're betting football, like we were never, John Rahm's the favorite in some spots at 10-1, like, and markedly so, like he is almost double the equity that we're seeing in some of the guys, just a little bit down the board. We would never bet on a 10-1 dog in football and feel like, oh, I'm betting on this like rock solid play. So there is some fun in golf betting and sprinkling in, depending on your unit size, a little bit on history. I think it makes sense.
One thing I was reading about Phil around the, oh, this is like in his backyard. But really what it said was Phil used to play Torrey Pines pre-US Open in 2008. So it's two completely different courses. Why is that of note? Because if you played the same course your entire life and everything's the same, cool, you've got some advantages. When they rip it all up and turn that into something completely different, yeah, it's nice that you're from down the street, but that's not really the same thing that you had in your backyard. So just one thing of note, because be careful with the media narratives that come out in terms of like, oh my God, this person's from California. Dig a little bit deeper into like, are they playing this version or was it the old version? So the next thing on my mind, which is the number
I want to touch, base on that real quick. I apologize.
Yeah, go for it, Ryan.
So this is unique in the sense that Torrey Pines is one of only two courses that we actually see in the regular rotation that is actually going to be part of the major. We see them play at Pebble in the regular tour, and now they play here in January in the Farmers. Now, yes, it's very different, right? It's the grass is different. Like the rye grass is gone. It's all the Kakua now, which is way harder. They grow it up. But I think there is definitely something to the, you talked about it being a little narrative based around where they're from, but there is something around success in Southern California golf, because there are things like Poa Nua greens and the Kakua grass. These things are very native. And when you look historically at guys that have success, they have success at the Genesis in LA. They have success at the American Express. They have success at some of these other corollary courses. So it's, I wouldn't necessarily like just go to the leaderboard at the Farmers from the last few years in January and like start to make my card, but I wouldn't throw it out completely either. So I just want to jump in before we, because I think that's important. Like there definitely is setups and styles that definitely fit that kind of Southern California piece.
Well, so we'll double back on that narrative in a second, because I believe the thing that the people are most interested in is Brooks versus Bryson, winners of three of the last four U.S. Opens. And to much of everyone's chagrin, they are not paired up together in the first 2 days. We're not exactly sure why that is or what the camp is, and we're not going to spread any fake news about whatever narratives that are out there about it. All we know is it did not happen, but it should have happened, because if you really wanted to put golf on the map, there would be must-see television if Bryson and Brooks were in the same pairing for two straight days. But now as we look at the betting side of things, the most logical thing is, all right, who are you going to take? Are you team Brooks or team Bryson? Looking at it right now, Bryson is minus 136, Brooks plus 105. But at one of the sports books, they've got an odds boost where you can have either golfer at plus 110, which to me is sort of a sneaky way of being like, hey, we want you to bet this, even though it's not the even bet based on the minus 136 that we saw at the beginning.
You know, there are so many reasons why this is great, and I wish they would have. And I agree. Like, obviously there are some rumors as to why, but like they both set up for this event. Like, it is not an accident that they have three of the last four, like you mentioned. They profile as guys where they're stretching this to the tips, about 7,700 yards. Like, you have to have length. They are bombers. They have the pedigree. You know, length obviously matters off the tee, but it really matters when that rough is inevitable. And the advantage that you have being able to take a shorter club into the greens is huge for these guys. I'm in on Brooks. I think Brooks missing the cut last week at a weak event in Congaree, where his ball striking was terrific, just didn't putt very well, went right out to Torrey and got a little extra, Torrey practice in, I think is really advantageous. Ball striking was great at Kiawah Island. I had a 50-1 ticket on him. So I was probably one of the only people that was rooting against Phil on Sunday. Obviously we're looking at a significantly shorter odds, but Brooks is a guy that he is wired for. He speaks it into existence. I'm just really focused on majors. He's admitted, I don't think the tour is going to like it, but like he said, I had a hard time getting up for this week and last week's little makeshift event in Congaree. He just doesn't, he's not programmed. His earlier press conference today, he really deflected all of the Bryson stuff. He is locked and loaded. He knows that historically he is going to make his mark in these majors and he has to take advantage of these, knowing that his health isn't assured. And I'm team Brooks here. I think he sets up really well. Bryson is too, defending champ, obviously his massive advantage is there too. But I think these Polo Greens are going to give him a little bit of trouble.
I'm also team Brooks and I'm just going to bet the plus 110, even though I'm not really getting that much of an advantage from it, but I want to root for Brooks over Bryson. And let's get to sort of our strategy in terms of how we bet golf, because for me, I'm an entertainment bettor. So I want to be able to root for Brooks Koepka and root against Bryson DeChambeau. That's a nice and simple thing. Does it mean it's the sharpest pick in the world? No, but that's how I like to do it. But one thing that I have been very successful at is the design of my card. And this comes from the number of guests that we've had on the show who are sharp that say, hey, Rob, here's how we bet things so that we're not going to be a square. And I know Bill Krakenberger has been on the podcast a few different times, and he is not a fan of the big winning futures, because I think about the number of times in which you're sitting on this value-based Jordan Spieth plus 1600 and he finishes second. And while it's great for the entertainment side of things, that is a losing bet. And there are parts of it where, all right, I'm going to mix and match what I like, but you even said it with John Rahm at plus 800 or plus 1,000, where that still is a long shot. And John Rahm could have an amazing tournament and finish third, and you're sitting there with a loser. So for me, I prefer to go down the avenue of Tony Finau and say, let me bet top 10s, because Tony Finau is someone who has just been cashing top 10s in majors left and right. And what I've learned is I'm not getting the biggest numbers whatsoever, but I'm around longer. And I even think to the PGA, Tony Finau wasn't really in contention at all until I looked up at the final day and he was tied for ninth. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. So we all fall in love with I want the guy at the top, but we fail to realize the value of someone who can come in and shoot a 4-under on their final round and sneak into that top 10. So for me, my card is going to be littered with top 10s, top 20s, because I want to cash based on the variability of golf. What about you? What do you think about that strategy and or what's your betting strategy?
Absolutely correct. I think it is the right way to do it. I think for a multitude of reasons, I think it's fair to sprinkle in some outrights. It's smaller positions, obviously very, much smaller. There are some books out there, Rob, that offer each way bets, which are basically, they capture the top, depending on what it is. So like Rivers, for instance, offers a 6-way each way. So basically you can bet on the win and it covers up to the top six. You'd get paid, if you finish sixth, you'd get paid a sixth of whatever his odds are. So in that instance, you would still be covered. Like, I should have done that with my Brooks bet that I mentioned earlier. So I had a 50-1 on DraftKings. He was available at 42-1 for an each way. And like a donkey, I chased the 50, left the value out there with the 42. If I would have each weighed it, I would have been sailing with, his top 2-3 finish. So yeah, Tony, I'm going to do it both ways with Tony. And to be honest, that is actually where I'm starting my outright card this week. And I know it is, we're talking about a guy who rolls out of bed and finishes top 10, can find himself a win for the life of him. He has one career win, is a weak field off event in like Puerto Rico, like 5 years ago, but he fits the profile. So when you talked about like finding a profile of how to bet, I also think you need to find a profile of player, and that's your card. You want to find guys that fit that archetype. And if you are right and your archetype is dialed in this week, you're going to hit in multiple spots, multiple top fives, multiple top tens. Finau played 4 events in California this season, 4th, T2, T2, and 2nd here at the Farmers. He is very familiar with the layout here. He has the distance to compete. He's shown that he can handle the Kikuwa and the Polya. He is, we want one of those, like, kind of, you know, what you talked about at the top. We want that, like, narrative-driven celebratory win. Tony Finau finding the winner's circle for really the first time in a full field event at a U.S. Open is all that and more. So, yeah, I think he is a very wise bet. Not only that, too, I think shopping lines. We have so many books available to us. And you don't get a lot of variation at the top when we're looking at outrights, Rob. But when you look at the top five, top 10 markets, they vary a ton. And if you're shopping the best number, you're going to be profitable over time.
And we are recording this Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern. And I want to mention that because that is a huge part of this, because it actually takes me time to put my cards together because I'm shopping on three different books and seeing a plus 180 somewhere versus a plus 200 somewhere else. Well, those are the little edges that you're going to get to be a positive better over the long run. So the next thing I want to do is talk about a group of three golfers who all have experience from the Farmers or in this area. We've got Xander, who is someone who's going to be pimped out a ton because of how close he is to this. Patrick Reed, who won at the Farmers earlier, and Victor Hovland, who tied for second at Torrey earlier this year. What are your thoughts on those three? Because that's the simple narrative of, hey, what happened earlier this year? Should we look at them in the Open?
Yeah, the Xander thing is interesting. I mean, he has the pedigree of a guy that we were expecting to win eventually. And this is going to be his fifth career U.S. Open. He has not finished worse than T6 in any of them. So again, to your narrative, feels like a pretty safe bet. I think you can get a 175 out there for a top 10 for Xander. But you have to think of, like, yeah, it's great. He grew up playing in this place. Like, he was there last time Tiger, on Sunday when made that chip on 18 and made that putt. Like, Xander standing there in the fairway, pretty cool. Again, kind of in that little narrative top part we're talking about. But, like, the pressure of him feeling like I'm playing in front of my friends and family and a course I grew up with, it's a hard one for me. I expect him to perform well. I don't necessarily like the price. I think we're paying that premium here this week for where he is with this familiarity. Patrick Reed's a guy that's really hard to passionately back. He is a guy that really miles a lot like a Jordan Spieth has a very similar game. Further down the board, you get the Cam Smiths of the world, where they don't really do it in the traditional sense, where they're not exceptional drivers of the golf ball. Their approach games are very sporadic, but they are elites on and around the green. And statistically speaking, putting and sometimes around the green can be pretty noisy to really say that that's a sticky stat. And sometimes when they show up, you know, Patrick Reed just, he putted the lights out. He found fairways. He didn't drive it very far. He avoided the rough, laid up onto the par fives when he had to, but just chipped and putt everyone to death. Also found advantages, times to be advantageous with his lie. That's probably another show for another day, but that is the Patrick Reed thing in spades. Victor Hovland's a guy that, he's inevitable too, right? This dude is like a machine for being 22 years old, incredibly likable, drives the ball like a beast. He's been immaculate tee to green for about 6 months and has really started to fill the only hole in his game, which is around the green. When he's wayward a little bit, his approach is typically dialed in, but when he misses the greens, he's been kind of a mess. Over the last couple of weeks, he's been really good. So I think you can get a better number on Hovland in comparison to Schauffele. I think that's a really nice matchup, getting the plus number on Hovland. I like them both over Patrick Reed.
And one player who is my new favorite player is Will Zalatoris. Woo-hoo. From betting him each of the last two majors, I believe it is. Any thoughts on him this week? Because he's someone, when I first heard of him, I think I got him to be the lowest debutante or something like that. And then he comes back in top 20s. And I'm like, I like this guy. I like his moxie, the pedigree of the way that they're talking about this guy. I don't know a ton about him, but I know that I want to root for the guy.
So we did not do this ahead of time. I did not tell you that I'm betting on Tony Finau. I did not tell you that my second outright play is Will Zalatoris. You can get 46-1 on DraftKings. I think there are smarter ways to get positional bets. To your point, you can find a Zalatoris at plus 350 on DraftKings for a top 10. I think that's an outstanding number. Look, all this kid does is go to the toughest tracks against the strongest fields and he contends. Top six last year in his debut, as you mentioned, at the US Open. Solo second at the Masters. He was top six last month at the PGA. He's terrific. He was seventh here at Torrey in January for the Farmers. Texas kid, but obviously showed a comfort level in the POA greens, which you love to see. 17th in the field in strokes gain, tee degree over his past 50 rounds. When he's wayward, it's a little bit with the putter, but you like to see that he's been a little familiar with it when he was here in January. I mean, 46 to 1, this guy should be closer into the mid-30s. I think we're getting a really nice number. I think historically, if we look back, we're not going to be able to get Will Z over 40 in majors moving forward. I think you just want to make a play blindly on the price.
I am in on that. Another thing that I'm in on is an entertainment prop. Hole in one. Yes, minus 137. No, plus 105. I have absolutely nothing to go on for this. I saw an article that Jason Logan wrote for Covers briefly talking about this, but I haven't seen any empirical data being like, this is why you should or shouldn't. And of course, I'm not exactly waking up in the morning being like, oh, I believe people are just going to hit holes in one at the US Open, which is extremely hard to play to begin with. But guess what I like to root for? I love to root for a hole in one. And me, as an average at best golfer, I have zero hole in ones to my name. Yet every time I step up to a par three, I call my shot because I am due. Therefore, I am team hole in one. I'm going to be betting, yes, minus 137. Do you have anything on this?
I got nothing on this. It feels like a, you know, the touchdown bets. I know people believe, you know, they got touchdown bets in football, just is very noisy, very hard to find any statistical evidence to do so. I think if you're going to, though, Rob, like, don't be the no fun police. Don't bet no for a hole. Like, just find another way to bet your money somewhere else. Don't be the guy sitting there begging for a near hole in one to not go in. You're paying, I think, the premium. It's juiced a little bit, but I understand the fun bet of it. Don't be the no hole in one guy.
So the good news of this bet is when a hole in one happens, I immediately have a new best friend golfer. So it can be anyone. And I'm just looking at these odds here from Webb Simpson to Sergio Garcia, Lanto Griffin. I don't care who it is. Any of them. All we need is one shot. I'm in on this bet. Ryan, are there any other golfers that you like, anyone you want to fade, anything else that you want to sort of drop us knowledge on around the US Open and your thoughts around betting it?
Yeah, I would fade Jordan Spieth. This is not a Jordan Spieth type of event. Again, you're paying the premium on the name and the current form has been outstanding, but Spieth is, like I mentioned earlier with Patrick Reed, this is really not a track where he gets it done. He is not a particularly great driver of the golf ball, not very accurate. Fairways are crucial here. We've seen that historically with US Opens, but the cap's been taken off a little bit, but it's been taken off by guys that are driving it into the 320s, 330s. And that's just not Jordan's game. Finding ways to short him in matchups, I think, is advantageous because again, you're paying for the name value. So you're going to get him flat to guys like Brooks, Bryson, Rory, like those guys are all in the same ballpark. I'd much rather have all of them over Jordan. This goes to the point earlier about shopping lines. There is a 50 to 1 on Louis Oosthuizen to win this event. Louis is a guy that has a wild track record. Louis has won 9 times internationally. He won a open championship in Europe back in 2010, but he has subsequently finished runner up at every major. Louis does nothing but show up at these tough tracks in major events and competes. And this is going to be a grinder. I don't know that we're going to see, like, we could see -2, -1 winning. Like Tiger was -1 in 08 when he won here. That just fits Louis. He did it the other day, a couple weeks ago at Kiowa. He just kind of is a grinder. He's great on POA. He putts really well. He doesn't have the distance off the tee, but he's really good with his long irons, which help since he's going to be hung back a little bit further in the fairway. Again, that's 33 to 1 on FanDuel, 50 to 1, I think, on PointsBet, but 33 on FanDuel. So again, that's a massive discrepancy just by shopping a little bit of numbers. So Louis, you can get that at, I think, 50 or 5 to 1 for a top 10.
Speaking of Rory, thoughts on him this week, back-to-back top 10s at US Opens, seeing plus 188 for a top 10. Do you like Rory this week?
So Rory has been wayward off the tee. That is his massive advantage, similar to Bryson, right? In a little bit of a less way. When Rory was rolling, it's off the tee. And he has basically lost or been flat to the field in strokes gained off the tee in five of his last six events. Obviously, the outlier there was the win that he had. I'm off of Rory. I have no problem catching him with a live bet if I see that he's driving it really well on Thursday. He has historically played pretty poorly on Thursdays in majors. So I definitely would wait and see. Rory's a guy to track. And that's the other cool thing about golf bets. Like, we don't have to make them all on Tuesday and Wednesday. We can bet live matchups in game. We can wait until, you know, round by round matchups where you see some really noisy stats. You can take, you know, different numbers because books are all over the place. Like, betting golf, there's a lot of ways to do it if you want to spend just a little bit of time shopping for numbers and looking at some of the stats in the previous rounds.
And we might as well have just buried the lead on John Rahm, the favorite of this entire tournament. He's got three top tens here, and his first win was at Torrey. What are your thoughts on how to play him? Because it sounds like at plus 800 or plus 1,000, that's not the way that we want to go. But sometimes I like to root for guys that are good, that should have a good track record. Certainly for me, matchups is one way that I'm going to look to do that. But how would you recommend getting action on John Rahm if we want it?
I like John Rahm, top five, plus 250, I think is a good bet. Again, to your point, like if we stumble a little bit and we get that two or three, we're still cashing a nice, you know, plus money ticket here. He should be the world's number one in short order. He was dominant. We always know what happened in Memorial. Dominant three rounds in Memorial and comes in motivated again. Good history here at Farmers. Loves San Diego. He proposed to his wife here. Like, he's got, there's a lot of good vibes going on in Southern California for John Rahm. There's just no world should he be twice the win equity of everyone else on the board. It's just really hard to back him at like 950 or 800s that are out there pre-tournament. So I want to back him. I think, like you said, matchups are really good. You know, finding spots where you can get him against the Spieth is something I'd be very, very comfortable with and going heavy on. But I like him as a top five. I think there's no way he's not in contention come the weekend.
Cool. Quick recap on my end. I will be backing Tony Finau, top 10. Our boy Will Z, I'm going to top 10 him. I'm going to have some Victor Hovland action. And yes, on the hole in one. Ryan, any recap that you want to throw out?
Yeah, I got one more I wanted to give you. Max Homa. Max Homa is a Southern California kid. Won at Genesis in LA a couple months ago. It's a corollary course here. There is no middle ground with Max Homa. He's basically either going to be top 10 or he misses the cut. But he, in his four events in California this year, he was in the mix in all of them, no worse than 21st, three top tens there. He is, I think, 110-1 as an outright. Again, really long, but again, 300 for a top 10 for Homa, I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm with you on Finau. I'm with you on Zalatoris. I think Oosthuizen is mispriced. There are a couple of bets. I think Shane Lowry, you can find him at minus 102 over Scotty Scheffler on FanDuel as a matchup for 72 holes. Love Sugar Shane this week. He's just playing really good, fits really well for this event, and comes in tremendous form.
Ryan, really enjoyed jamming with you. Where can everybody connect with you?
Thanks, Rob. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Noonan. 4 for 4. We are launching golf this week for the very first time. Everything is going to be free. My pre-tournament article, along with our new guy, PGA Splits 101, who has been doing outstanding work on Twitter for months. He's going to have a pre-tournament model and picks breakdown as well. And then he'll also have rounds 2, 3, and 4 picks for you as well. All free, all week. We'll also, starting on Thursday, have a 25% off code that'll let you get basically everything we'll have for betting, including our NFL season, for 25% off. So it's going to be a fun year at 4 for 4.
And I want to hear from you. What is your U.S. Open card looking like? Are you team Brooks or are you team Bryson? Are you team hole in one? You can hit me up on Twitter at Rob Cressy. Also make sure to tag at Covers. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The broken delic devil hit you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rump. If you like the way the sound pump, pump it in your back trunk. And let loose with the juice.
when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than Tupac.